Welcome to the Ambitious Tribe podcast with your chief encourager, Cassie Pajarillo. It's time to drive ambition and build a better business with a plan that's clear, transformative, progressive, and profitable. Now for your host, Cassie Pajarillo.
Hi, everyone. It's Cassie. Welcome back to the Ambitious Tribe podcast. Today, I have one of the most sought-after designers of the generation. Mara Chua is on the show. Mara is a fashion designer from Manila, Philippines. I came to know and met her sometime 10, 15 years ago when I used to be a marketing manager in some sports and lifestyle arena in that industry. And she was already actually exploring the world of eccentricity and making use of excess materials into something of great use. We're going to talk about more of that in a while. And I've witnessed and seen her evolution to now embracing featuring classic hints into modernization, from subtle hints of Baroque and Rococo, vintage, to featuring classic hints into all these old Hollywood glam and corsetry. She will definitely let you know what she is experiencing and specializing right now. But she has been featured in front of the covers of first-tier publications in the country. She recognized as one of the promising young designers as well, and she's been really practicing her art for the longest. So she is a designer warrior also. She also designed actually our Miss Universe Rabia Mateo's outfits during the pre-pageant game. And so if you are listening in the month of June, we're celebrating Pride Month, and we have Mara today to speak about transitions, equity over equality, her story, how she did it, and the evolution of self-expression towards freedom and authenticity. Okay, so driven and ambitious. Hey there, Mara. Nice to see you.
Hey.
Hello. Hi. How has been what's going on with you, Mara?
All right, now returning to my feet. Like everyone else, trying to wade through like this new landscape, basically.
Yeah. So, Mara, I mean, I understand that, you were all over the place in 2020. I think, with all these difficulties that happened in 2020, one of those things that went to your career was you also had to pivot and in some ways had to absorb digital transformation. And it's interesting because your industry is fashion design, wherein you need to really have people right in front of you in order to serve them. But in your case, I've been watching you on social, and you have been creating, dresses for, Australia, New Zealand, and all these places. Like, how do you do it? What happened in 2020 that really changed the game for you?
Actually, ever since I started, I sort of put a focus on internet, on making my presence more felt on the internet, because I already knew that internet was back then the future. So I really made a point to regularly post my stuff on Instagram, on Facebook. Back then, Instagram wasn't really super active. So it worked for me back in 2020, because then I already established my presence online somehow. So it wasn't hard for me to get clients from abroad at the same time to market, face masks, which was one of my strategies in 2020.
Maybe can you tell us, what many milestones ago, who is Mara Chua and how did you get here?
I started with Mega Young Designers Competition back in 2012. I joined there. I made it until the very end. I became first runner up to Renan Pacson, who's a good friend of mine. And then I don't know, from there, I kind of met people who, like, introduced me to dresses and everything at the same time. We started building my bridal line as well. I initially didn't intend to become a bridal designer, but a friend of mine from high school wanted to have her wedding gown made, and she was very, very open about the design, so I was able to really explore my vision for bridal, and I found out that there's actually a market for what I do. So I sort of continued it, and then it evolved into basically two lines right now, which is my eponymous label, Marachua, and then another more bridal retail focused line, which is opposite Back Studio. And then, like, it was like born maybe 2 or 3 years ago, but it was like really good time because then the pandemic happened and then everybody wanted what we were doing with opposites, which is something, you know, less human contact, easier to produce and simpler, but
yeah,
still meaningful.
But how did you find your voice, Mara? I mean, if they get to see, of course, the designs of your dresses, it's actually out of, you know, it's not the usual. It's not the typical. And I love the fringe style. I love the eccentricity. And how did you find that?
A constantly evolving process for me. It's only recently that I've sort of settled into, how do I say this? Into a space where I can call it like my own visual self. It's always been like, oh, I like this, maybe I can incorporate this into the design, I like that, etc. And then as a result, I kind of absorbed a lot of things and then filtered out the ones that didn't feel like it was me. So that's how I arrived with like my signature hit now, which is sort of like a very powerful version of womanhood. A very, like, you know, it's the type of thing that you want to wear. It's the armor that you want to wear when you want to feel like you're the hottest person ever.
So what do you think is, what is the signature Mara style anyway?
It's definitely very modern. Something, you move to the beat of your own drum, you're unapologetic, you're a woman who embraces the power of woman.
Yeah, I've noticed you are very, very strong with corsets. You're very strong with bold statements. And I remember you sharing about storytelling on the dresses that you're created. I mean, I think it's not for everyone. But you get to express this also. I mean, what is your process when it comes to talking to these brides or to these women, and you get to incorporate all these, you mean that vision, married to your vision, their vision to your vision, and how did you get to marry it? And who is the typical Mara Chua bride that you actually serve?
With brides, it's a different story because it's a very personal process.
Yeah.
Something that they will only wear once. So it has to, like, we normally go back and forth a lot. But, like, somewhere along the road, there's, like, this light bulb moment where I kind of figure out who she is and then what she really needs somehow visually. Because as a designer, it's my job to put her in something that she has not yet imagined, because I'm the one equipped with the right vocabulary, the visual vocabulary for her. So that's how I normally work with brides. With like models and celebrities, I mean, they're very, very open to ideas anyway. So when you put her in something that she feels good, she's like, fine.
Mara, there are a lot of people in this space of fashion. Definitely. Right. And putting yourself on the map, I'm sure it's not an easy, you know, an easy transition, or it's not an easy way in. I guess. Can you tell us a story on what are the challenges that you had what are the challenges that you had to endure? And what were your thoughts and feelings about it? And especially knowing, of course, that you're in the LGBT, you know, and in the LGBT community also, there are competition. I mean, how do you handle the competition? How do you handle putting yourself on the map? And here you are, a new player, right? You're a new player, and then suddenly you are on all these magazines and stuff like that. Like, what is going through your thought as you evolved as well?
When I was start, I think it's easier to like get yourself out there today with the internet. When I started back in 2013, the internet was just it's something people use for work and school. It's not something you use to promote yourself. So you really have to do it the manual or the hard way. Like, word of mouth, you attend fairs, etc., etc., etc. I mean, today you don't even have to attend fairs anymore. You just have to really like advertise yourself wisely. So I mean, that when I was starting, that was a challenge. You know, how do I get myself like out there? Especially since we didn't have a storefront. I mean, if you pass by the street, you will never find where I'm doing my stuff. And then, well, I just kept doing what I felt like doing. I didn't really do, like, it never really crossed my mind to do something else, to do something that felt like it wasn't me. So, in a way, I'm not really, like, concerned about competition.
Love it.
That's what I do is something that's uniquely me. So I mean, I'm actually very like embracing of like other people's vision and perspective, you know, because I think competition, you know, I mean, there's competition is not for me. Like, I don't really see it as a threat. I enjoy seeing other designers thrive as well. Genuinely speaking, I don't feel like I have to do something to outshine them or something or anything, because I know that what I'm doing is something that, you know, very few people can really do.
Ah, so proud of you. I just love that. It's very Miss Universe. Yeah, Mara, you have been very outspoken when it comes to your entrepreneurial journey. Now, let's get into that. This is going to be very interesting because I know, like, you have been sharing about it. I mean, having to work on just a room before to, you know, the warehouse stories, the hiring stories, just so many. So let's get into the entrepreneurial path that Mara Chua had to go through and is going through. And yeah, I mean, I love how you are also educating, actually. You've been very educational. I mean, I remember, you know, you were posting about how people think that, oh, just for a simple dress, how come it costs this much? But here you are, you walk us through, like, okay, this is how the bid work actually happens. It's not just like a glue gun that we just put it in there and stuff like that. Thousands of beads, it's how many hours. And, you know, because of that, like, before I got married, right, before I got married, I was also looking for dresses and stuff. And then this is where I really appreciated it more, that you have been sharing these kinds, because for me, you know, you actually opened up this entire thinking that, or not really thinking, but more of like the perspective of how to actually see the workmanship of a designer. So, and also the hiring. So let's talk about your entrepreneurial journey and why are you actually educating people about the craft that you guys are doing? I mean, not just you, but the fashion industry in general. Let's talk about that.
Okay, first part. I started very young, I think, 2021, 22.
Yeah.
I mean, I was excited to dive into the business. And then when I started making a little bit of money, I was excited to like put up my own stock store and stuff. Because that was the trajectory then. But like, you know, as with young age, you make certain decisions that you probably regret later in life. But you will learn a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's part of being an entrepreneur. You will like learn hard lessons along the way. And I made quite a few of them. I mean, it wasn't like smooth sailing all the way. I moved a lot. I mean, this latest place that I'm working in is like 2 years old, which is probably one of the longest stays I've had. But like it's a very interesting journey to grow and grow at a certain pace that's like fast. Like you have to add people, and then you have to learn the legalities. If you can't just hire people, you have to take care of them.
Oh yes.
I mean, these are very, very real lessons that you have to learn, and you don't just learn this overnight. So and then you compound that with like the design aspect of the job. It's fun, but it's never boring. So you were asking me for like the past couple of years what I was doing. All I could ask is work. It's a really time consuming. And yeah. One of the most unforgettable like experiences I've had was acquiring more clients than I can handle. But thankfully, I was able to handle it. It was like super stressful. And it was like every time that we're planning for production, etc. I always go back to that point where we had like, I think, 10 weeks of notes, literally 3 hours sleep. We would sleep at 3 a.m., wake up at 7 to continue working for like 10 straight weeks. After that, we were so burned out. So I would like go back to that because that was like a very big learning lesson for us. Like, never again would we want to go back to that place. Properly, you have to put everything on the proper calendar. I mean, I was starting then, I didn't have assistants at the time, so like, I was like saying, oh yeah, sure, you can, sure, I still have time. So like now we already have proper planning, so December, it's already in the calendar, it's already there, we already plotted like when we have to start the production, etc. So we don't have to rush everything. Because I think when I was starting, there wasn't really like a very strong, there wasn't really like a school or anything that would teach you the entrepreneurial side of fashion. It was really mostly the fashion side of fashion. Like, you really have to learn the ropes of like creating a system for things so that you can be consistent in what you do. Good work today and then you produce okay work tomorrow because you weren't able to produce you weren't able to build an internal system that could guarantee the quality of the work and the timeliness of the work.
Yeah, I totally echo you on you on that. That systems talaga, having system processes and structures in place. I think I have been saying this also over the podcast several times also that it's so important to have systems in place. But it's not also easy to put systems in place because you have to go through the needle of knowing what kind of systems do you need, right?
It takes a certain mindset to be able to build one without the guidance of another person or a partner who knows how to do this. Like, I mean, I'm by myself. I do everything from the business side to the design side. So it takes a certain mindset to be able to plot it down. And most designers, they're artists. So, you know.
They're not business owners, they're just artists, right? Yeah, it's a different
thing. They're very creative, they're very emotional. So I think this is one of the main hurdles when it comes to like design business. That's why you always, before you always have like problems with them not delivering on time, etc., etc. But it's evolving, you know, it's evolving. Like now with consumers being more aware of what they deserve, we as suppliers have to meet the demand of the consumers. We always have to deliver on that. It's like number of people.
Yeah.
Can a designer these days cannot get away with not delivering.
That's a good point. That's a good point. That actually, parang I think in every industry also, if you are a visionary, it's hard to be the executioner. Okay. I mean, I think that's a wrong word. Pinatay mo siya. The one who executes. Right? So, yeah. So, I think it's a two different thing that business owners also tend to wear, you know, I mean, two hats, but you can't really be two hats all the time. You can't wear two hats all the time, right? So that's why systems, it's in place. Mars, specifically, I remember this too, is that when you first hired the people, maybe let's walk us through the journey of your entrepreneurship during, you know, I mean, I'm sure there are young people or there are aspiring fashion designers who is listening right now and is admiring you for the work that you do and wanted to also open her own boutique, maybe, or maybe just designing. I don't know, like all those things. What are the things that they should consider first as their foundation before they dive into the next step? Like, this is your hardcore experience. So maybe let's walk into that.
I think with, especially with custom garments or like made to order, you really have to know what you're doing. You can just know like a piece of just one part of it. You have to know like the whole process from start to finish. You don't have to do it yourself, but you have to know how things are made, how things go, so you have a very good idea of like how soon can you expect a garment to be constructed from start to finish. So you have a very good idea of the time of your timelines on your deliverables. That's I think the very like although it really helps if you know how to do the patterns yourself, because that's like the backbone of the whole production. So it helps a lot if you know how to do it yourself, because you're going to save a lot of money on hiring a pattern maker. Because your pattern maker is going to be the most expensive, going to be your most expensive talent, because he's also going to be the most.
Okay, so patterns. Let's get into patterns. How important is it, like especially now, like when you do your bridal, of course they're not all the same, right? So how do you actually get to be sustainable knowing that it's a different pattern altogether, like all different brides, all different, you know, clothes? And
that's the thing, it's not that different. It's not that different if you know.
Oh, really?
Already figured it out. It's not, you don't have to do it from scratch every single time.
Oh, that's why there's a signature look, right? Yeah. That's why there's a signature Mara look, because
you don't have to do it from scratch every single time once you figured it out. The pattern is, how do I explain the pattern? It's like the base of everything. If you're into construction, it's basically like the whole frame of the structure. If you're cooking, it's like the butter, it's food. It's like you cannot build anything without it. Especially if you're going to go into scaling the business and producing more, then you really need to have a pattern. You really have to have patterns, because it's how you can produce more without having to repeat the whole process over and over again.
Okay, so I'm learning here. So even if, just a little nutshell on that, I mean, a summary on that, even if your brides, of course, are looking different, that's why there is a signature look or the signature, I guess it's signature look, right? The signature design that stands out at Asmara. What happens is this is your way of scaling as well, because, okay, you already have, okay, this is how it sounds like, and then the rest of the features is actually what is, I mean, becomes the differentiator. So it's like our signature offer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have like a base pattern.
Base. Okay, there you go.
We rarely like start from scratch these days because we already have like the base pattern from like extra small to like really extra large. So we have like a very complete set of sizes already. That's how we were able to actually pivot to like be more ready with our oriented service with opposites of track recently, because we already completed our patterns. So it's easier for us to recreate all our styles now. So that's how important pattern is. Because you know your pattern, you can do it consistently. So the fit, the finish, the cut, everything is going to be very consistent. So the prevailing system locally with designers is that you have like probably 2-3 gown makers who do it from scratch, but you can tell if someone did it, one of the gown makers did it, or gown maker B did it, or gown maker C did it, because the pattern, the way they work is very different. The styles are very different, so it's not very consistent. The proportions are different, etc., etc. We managed to eliminate that by creating like one pattern for everything.
Yeah, and from what I'm learning here from you is that aside from having the signature offer, which is the base pattern that's, you know, that gets to scale your business also into a repeatable process, what I'm learning here is also as a consumer, it's really important for us to know what is the signature look of the designer so that I would know, like, is this the kind of design that I want? So if it's all about corsets, okay, I want to think about Mara. If it's all about silhouette, silk, whatever, maybe it's another person. If it's color gold, then all gold glitter, whatever, it's another designer and stuff like that. So I think what I'm learning from you here is also number 3, is that having to also put in the consistent work of that specific pattern and showing it off to the people over and over and over again, regardless of whatever the design is, because it creates your personal brand.
Yes.
On who Mara Hachua is or who the designer is. Okay, this is interesting. Right. So, but when. Hey, Driven and Ambitious, do you dig today's topic? Well, I'm interrupting my own episode to invite you to apply for the free private training through www.cassiepajarillo.com, where you get to learn how to have a powerful profile online as you turn your network into paid high-ticket clients with a plan. If you're still scratching your head on how to make LinkedIn and social media work for you, this training has helped coaches, consultants, private practitioners, and content creators adopt digital transformation, have systems, processes, and structures in their practice, and be amazing profitable CEOs online. By the end of the training, you'll walk away with a deeper understanding, implementable way forward, and a roadmap for your online coaching or consulting businesses that's clear, transformative, progressive, and profitable. Remember, there are no glass ceilings, and you can definitely prioritize work-life integration. Apply today at www.cassiepajarillo.com. Link is in the description box below. Can't wait to see you there. And now let's get back to today's episode. When it comes to empowering decisions, when you finally said, I know you have a lot of stories about this, when you finally said you are going to hire na, ayan. So when you said you're going to hire already, oh my gosh, Mars, you have so many stories about this. What was the lesson, or what's the greatest lesson of all greatest lesson that you have been sharing? Do you want to share?
My first hire was like before 2012 even, like 2011. Just ask our family driver if he knows someone, if he knows a neighbor who's like sewing that they can hire. That's how it started. I was like super young, so I didn't have a lot of qualifications. I just needed someone to help me too. That's how I started. And then she hired a neighbor of hers that's not really a sewer. But I got lucky because this person, her name is Lucy, are my second hire, basically. Stayed with me until today. So she's been with me for more than 10 years.
Wow! Yeah.
So I got really, really lucky with that. I think at the early stages, I was looking for skill. Now I'm looking for character. It really comes to hiring people. Like, I want someone like Lucy who, I don't know why she stayed with me, but probably I'd like to believe that she saw the vision. She saw, like, how this can work. Like, I can have, like, there's longevity with this person. So I want to see someone who's staying, not because of just the compensation, but because they have a certain sense of responsibility as well. But, you know,
yeah.
They entered this, so they need to make it work as well.
Okay. So I'm learning here, okay, don't look for skill right away. Look for attitude and character and who they are.
Skill can be taught, although there is a certain limit to that. But generally speaking, yes, skill can be taught. Like the person who's doing my wedding gowns right now, he never even sold wedding gowns before I taught him how to do it.
Yeah.
Skill can definitely be taught. It's something that if you find find the right person who's like very open to new ways of to learning, to new techniques,
yeah,
then you can definitely teach that person. It takes a certain attitude to learn at a later age. And I've hired some really, really good ones, but they're very rigid in their point of view. They're used to doing things their way. They're not used to integrating what they learned into the system that they built. So it didn't work. So I mean, they didn't last very long because we already have a very, very established system. So if you're not malleable, then you're going to find it very hard to adjust.
Yeah, there's going to be certain resistance to that. Wow.
Yes, I really believe it's character. It's like it's very hard to explain because you're not really looking at this. You're not looking for certain items in the CV of a person before.
Agree.
To determine, like, is this person a good fit for the company? So you really have to like take your time to get to know them, like how they are. You don't really have to hire the perfect person. Just have to hire like the person that you know you can work with. You can have a harmonious relationship for a very long time.
Parang boyfriend ba yan?
More or less. You have to think long term. Also, another factor in hiring, you have to think long term because it's very hard to train people. So you have to think, like, is this person going to be with me for the next, can this person stay with me for the next 2-3 years or 5 years? Because it's very hard to train. It's very hard for people to adjust to a new working environment. And every time you're hiring, it's starting from zero. So hard.
Yeah. Para, did you
my virtual assistants right now. It's driving me crazy.
Well, it's a different bell altogether. Okay. So Mart, when you know, I mean, speaking of all these hard decisions that you have gone through and is going through, and you're a growing business and all, have you ever had discrimination or have you ever felt, you know, or treated differently by other people because you are I mean, what is, okay, let's get into the hard, you know, I mean, I think I'm going to ask for, I mean, the hard conversations here. Did you ever had being gay?
Like, for being trans, running my own business, I mean, I'm pretty shielded from, like, the harshness of reality because, I mean, it's my business it's my territory. So, I mean, people have to adhere to my rules. But outside, generally speaking, no, not really. Or if there is, I'm like, lately, I'm just like brushing it off. Because, I mean, before when I was younger, I'd be more affected by it. But now that I'm slightly older, just a little bit older.
Yeah.
And there comes a point where you realize life is not that long to be bothered by small things. And I never really had like major discrimination problems, except probably like, though yes, I've developed like a sort of I wouldn't say phobia, but with gyms normally, because I have to use the restroom and stuff, so I normally check if the gym has unisex CR.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be put in another CR that I'm uncomfortable with. And it happened once, but I was like super duper young, like 21. So I mean, that's really the thing. It's normally the CR issue, but normally with malls, I don't really check anymore. But with gyms, they're more sensitive because people take a bath there. So.
Yeah. So, okay. My first question here with you is, are you comfortable being called as gay, or is it more respectfully better as trans?
I identify as trans.
Right. Right? Okay. Yeah. And when people actually go to you and tell you, oh, Mara, she's gay, or bakla, or whatever, ganyan. I think there is some sort of mental endurance or stamina into shielding that. I mean, how? Isn't it traumatic?
That's what I'm saying. I'm not really, like, bothered by it anymore. Like, I mean, you can...
How did you get into that bubble of... You know what? I just mind my own business. And
because being trans is not my primary identity. I guess it's just a portion of me. So I like being like cooped up in my own business for the longest time and not really like socializing and going out. I forget sometimes that I'm trans. I think with straight people, you don't think that you're a girl all the time. So, with me, I don't really think that I'm trans all the time. I mean, most of the time, I'm just, you know, I'm hungry. I want to eat something. That's what I'm thinking about. So, I learned that, you know, if being misgendered or mislabeled would, if I allow myself to be affected by such a small facet of who I am, then I'm just doing myself a disservice because I have better things to do than, you know, worry about people mislabeling me, because more often than not, it's an honest mistake. It's not really a deliberate, you know, a deliberate attempt to, I don't know, to
attack you. Yeah. Yeah. So are you saying that people are more accepting now than how it was then?
People are more aware. No, I mean, 10 years ago, nobody knows what trans is. You have to explain to people what trans is. You know, they're very confused what trans is. You think that trans means you've undergone the difference between trans and non-trans is basically a gay man who's undergone surgery, but it's not. Trans is an identity. It's being gay is basically it's your orientation, who you're attracted to. what you're attracted to. So if you're a man, you identify as a man and you're attracted to another man, then you're gay or you're homosexual. But if you're trans or an individual who identifies, or when you look into the mirror or when you wake up in the morning, basically you don't think yourself as the gender that you were born with. You think of yourself as another gender. And we've also gone a very long way with that, because now people are already discussing about non-binary genders, fluid gender fluidity, etc., etc., etc. And in a way, sometimes feel that, you know, I mean, it's a very important discussion, but it's not something that I live with 24/7. Like, I know I'm trans, I guess. I'm also other things. I'm a designer, a human being who feels the same way as other people.
That's actually beautiful. Thank you for sharing that, Mara. Is there anything?
I try to bring back the perspective to like straight people. Like, I always ask them, if you're a guy or if you're a girl, do you even really think you're a girl 24/7, or you're a guy? Is that something that's going on with your on your mind all the time? I think there's this notion that since we're different, we seem to have this. We're somehow living this experience 24/7, but in fact, we're just living the same lives as other people.
Yeah, you're still the same human being.
Okay.
Huh. That is actually gold, Mara. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, I think it's really important that you expounded on, hey, do you think of yourself as a man 24/7 day or a woman 24/7? I mean, of course not. You think about yourself as a human being doing what human beings had to do or had
to do. You don't think about, I'm a trans woman here sitting in the car in EDSA. No, just this off that it's traffic in EDSA.
Yeah, and but do you still think of yourself as you're different, or do you just think of yourself as we're all different? So what is the difference?
I've accepted the fact that I'm different. That's why I don't have to really think about it. I'm different. So be it. But everyone's different. Nobody's really the same. It's just that. We're more visible. Our difference is more visible because we portray it outward. But everyone's different. I mean, nobody's made the same way. Nobody's experiencing same thing exactly the same way. So our perceptions are going to be different. Our beliefs are going to be different. It's just owning that difference that's really I mean, for us, we have to really own it, because it's something that society has levied on us, I guess. But yeah, you come to a point where you just feel like, I just want to, you know, live my life, basically.
Is there anything that, I mean, currently, or maybe in the, I mean, past few days, past few weeks, is there anything that you would want to share, but you think it's important to actually talk about, like being in the LGBT community or being an LGBT yourself, in the LGBT space yourself? I mean, is there anything else that people still don't understand when it comes to?
I mean, there's a lot of things that people still don't understand. I mean, you have like, you're still having discussions about whether trans women should join beauty pageants or not, when it's already...
What's your take? What's your take?
I mean, the Miss Universe already said that, that you know, trans women can join. There's already a trans woman who joined. So I don't think it should be a discussion anymore. But my take is, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah, why not? Because trans women are women. You know, it's what, who they identify as. There is no if and buts about that. You're not, you cannot say you're a woman, but you're just simply a woman.
Yeah, I remember there were a lot of discussion about it, that if you are a transgender and you are in Miss Universe, I mean, how could that be fair to the women who are actually born as women. I mean, you should have your own. That's why you have your supernatural. Is that how I? Is that correct?
Supernatural.
Yeah.
I get like the protectiveness of the space, but I think the larger discussion is having to share such a small space, because that is the space that the patriarchal society has given to women, especially here in the Philippines. Like the Philippines, where women can be successful. I mean, of course, they can be successful in other fields as well, but this is like, this is where they can dominate. So, and it's just a tiny, tiny space. And I feel like, I always circle back to the movie, Parasite. You know, you have the two poor families fighting over red dogs. Basically, they're killing each other over whatever was left over by the rich family. I mean, this is the same situation. Why limit yourself to a small space if you can expand it and include more women into the fold? You're not, the trans women will not be taking any opportunity from women who were born female. It, by joining Miss Universe, it's going to still be the same judging process. It's going to be the same. And we're not, when you allow trans women to join, they're not going to be favored or anything. You know, they're not going to like pick a trans woman over and someone who's born female just because trans women are not allowed to join, are not allowed to join. But maybe we can have even more women to represent us in these venues like this universe. So I think, yeah, that's how I see it. Why limit yourself to a small space if you can make it bigger?
Beautiful. Yeah, that's actually true. Of course, it's going to be, you know, it's been very controversial, if I must say.
But change is always never easy.
Yeah.
You know, it's always, change has always been met with apprehension, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I've seen changes over the last decade more than the previous decade. So I'm very optimistic about it. People now understand the very basic concept of simply respecting one's preferred gender. I mean, if I say that I want to be referred to as she, it's not a big deal anymore. people just refer me to she. I mean, I went to the mountains like this weekend with a group of people, and they're very respectful of my gender identity. And, you know, it's so easy. It's so easy. It's not even that hard.
Yeah, it's so much better now than it was. And with more awareness, I believe. And people now really embraces it even more, knowing that I think having champions in this space made a huge difference. I mean, from what's her name? Jenna. I mean, what's her name? Angie King. Who else?
Yeah, that's why, like, although I personally like, that's why I'm not very interested in the discussion of participation in Miss Universe, because I feel like we should be already at the point where we should be pushing for more trans women visibility in other fields as well, not just in Miss Universe, because we already have trans women who are PhD holders, who are lawyers, who are, you know, I mean, living very real lives and being successful at those too. But at the same time, and also, like, yes, it's important because there's visibility. And when there's visibility, there's more awareness. And I think Miss Universe is a very big platform here, especially in the Philippines, where, you know, about trans rights as well. So, so that's why I'm still supportive of it, although I'm just not as active as I was before.
Let's get into that. So you designed actually Rabia, recently. How did you get that gig, and how was it like working in the Miss Universe space anyway?
I started in 2018, and I started dressing another local candidate, her name is Isabella, she's from Sorsogon. I did her national costume, and then at the time, she's under Aces, under Aces and Queens, which is like
Jonas,
the BS cap as well. So, at the time, it was my friend Yo who started a stylist for them. Really new, like he used to be like a model scout. That somehow he ended up in with Aces and Queens styling for some of their girls. He almost literally dragged me into it. I'm not really interested in dressing pageant girls. At the time, my perception of pageant is very traditional in a way that, you know, it's sparkly. It's not me, basically. But I don't know. When I met Isabella, I was like, maybe this can work somehow. But like, the camp itself was a little apprehensive of me because they saw my works. It's more bridal. It's more in bridal / avant-garde. They don't know how I'm going to translate that to pageant. But after a while, we've been very successful with Isabella. We did a lot of really interesting stuff with her, especially with daywear and pageant. We really tried to sort of update the pageant look somehow. So that's how they sort of remembered me. And after Isabella, it's sort of snowballed already from there. So we started dressing other girls as well from different camps, like Samantha Bernardo, Isabel Kea, but they also dressed her for Miss Grand International. And then they approached me for Rabia, for a couple of shoots with Rabia as well. That's how I ended up with Rabia.
Yeah, but I think it's just, do you think that being in that Miss Universe pre-pageant glam team is a stepping stone into this world of being a fashion designer? Like, okay, if you are starting in the fashion design industry, okay, this is going to be your path. You're going to discover yourself and yada, yada, yada. Once you get into the pageantry, you have arrived or something like that. Do you think like it's a milestone?
Yeah. I wasn't even aware that it was a thing. Like you have to be a pageant designer to be considered like one of the designers here in the Philippines, or at least you have to be like on the national stage or something. I wasn't even aware that was a thing when I joined. It was purely like something for fun at the time, especially with Isabella, because I was busy with bridal. But when I started doing Isabella stuff, I was like, like, this is fun. This is actually more me than bridal. Like, this is,
yeah, you get to play.
That's the catalyst of how I really arrived with like the marriage to a woman, the brand, the visual brand of the day, like the very sexy, very powerful version of womanhood. It started there. It was the catalyst. Like, oh, this might be who I am.
And this is where you discovered yourself more. I mean, in terms of the style, the fringes.
I wasn't really expecting it to be like a stepping stone for me. It was really just a side project where I could be who I am as a designer without really adhering to the limitations of bridal. Because with bridal, there will be limitations because you're dealing with basically a religious outfit. So you have to respect the
Catholic and religion.
So with like with Isabella, we could cut the necklines lower, hike the hemlines higher.
Yeah.
More different textures like snake skin, animal skin, faux snake skin, faux animal skin, etc. So it was a catalyst for me. It was really like a very nice creative avenue. I wasn't really expecting it to blow up and put me on the map or something.
Yeah, so but how was it like working now with the Miss Universe team, being considered, of course, with Rabia's behind Rabia's success, being in her glam team? What was the experience like, and what are the things that you've learned actually? Actually, that's the most important piece. What have you learned that you want to share?
Very cool. So, like, whenever they need something, they just call me. So, working with them, I mean, Miss Universe Philippines is a new organization, so they're more receptive, I guess. I think that's a good term. They're more receptive. things. So, like, when they call me to do, like, a red dress, I told them I want to do a maroon dress and leather. I was like, they were like, oh, sure, why not?
So they're more open to creative, you know, creative visual. Yeah. Are you saying that you just really dressed up Rabia according to what you see, according to your vision, and just kind of like
a bunch of photos of Athena, basically. It has to be strong, it has to be powerful. And then one of the photos is like a molded leather bodysuit or something. And I was like, maybe that could work. And then luckily I had like 2 yards of maroon leather sitting in my stock. I was like, okay, let's make this work. I told them that I think I just asked them, is it okay if it's going to be maroon? It's more not even maroon, it's oxblood. Is it okay if it's going to be this color? Is it okay if it's going to be leather? And like, yeah, sure, go ahead.
And her waistline is 23.5, so okay. Can we all have that? All right. So thanks for sharing that, Mara. So, but most importantly, what is it that you learned throughout the process of being, you know, the responsibility of being part of the success of? What was the mindset?
It's collaborative work, you know. You get to work with a lot of creatives that you never normally work with. So for me, it also comes with a certain level of like maturity, I guess. Mm-hmm. Keep a very open mind to always to learn how to listen to suggestions as well, because even though pageant is more creative, it's a more creative sphere than bridal, it still has certain pageants have certain things. You have to study these dogs. You have to really, you have to listen to the oldies who's been fielding girls for a very long time, because they know what they're talking about. You just have to be very open as well. Because you can be too rigid in the fashion world. You have to keep an open mind. You learn how to take suggestions. And you know, you learn how to basically not take it personally, I guess.
Yeah.
There was one time we did like this Filipiniano dress for Bella and Sonia's Filipino. The tool Filipiniano dress, tutu. It's a very short tutu dress. We had a bit of discussion about that because they wanted it like slightly longer. I said no, let's keep it like really short for me. Then I initially wanted it tied. We already tied the fabric. When we fitted it, we were like not too convinced that it was the right look for her, so we had to redo the skirt and do it like plain. It worked for the best.
And yeah.
So you learn. You basically learn how to like, you know, to listen to people, because also know what they're doing. I think that's one of the things that I sort of pick up the pageants. Like you're lucky to be in the pageant sphere because a lot of the creatives there are like established already. So they know what they're doing, and it's a great way to learn. It's a great way to expand your creativity as well. I can't hear you now, sorry.
Who is a person that you admire in the not just pageantry and all that, maybe in the space that you are currently in? Is there any other person that you would say, okay, if I work with this person, or if I arrived into this space, I would call myself as, okay, I am fulfilled.
Okay, I'm thinking, like, locally, I have a lot of, like, designers locally that I respect because they're really good at what they do. But, like, a dream boss or anything like that, or a dream collaborator, I don't really have one. Yeah. Although I have, like, a bunch of creatives that I'm happy with, I want to work with. UX, etc. But designers, I don't know. I mean, internationally, I do like a dream designer. When I was younger, I really wanted to work for her.
Who is this?
It's a Japanese designer named Rei Kawakubo.
Okay.
She designs for Comme des Garçons. They got really famous with the heart shape t-shirt and sneakers. But they do a lot of like really avant-garde stuff.
Ah, yeah, you love the avant-garde stuff. But for real, locally?
Locally, yeah. Wala, maybe like collaborate with other designers because most of like the ones that I like are normally mine, which is fair.
Because you're more of like an eccentric side of...
Exciting type of design. But I really have very deep respect for the classic designers who like refine their work. Like you have artists like Harry Santiago, etc., who's like very, very good at what they do, very refined. And I respect that because it takes years of painstaking practice. Basically, you have to do things over and over again for decades to reach that level. And that's something that I admire, especially with like the more craftier like designers whose career span decades. It's not just maintaining a career for how many years, one career for decades. So that's something I respect.
Okay. So but what is in store for Maratua? What's next for you?
Right now? So we're veering towards the more ready to wear for my bridal for opposites of craft.
Yeah.
That's currently the market. And then for the main line, it's really more like an abstract experimental line right now. And then currently I'm also helping my mom out with her business. So there's that as well. So I mean I have my hands full. I have the company meeting tomorrow morning actually.
All right.
Company meeting for my mom's business.
That's great. At least you're here helping mom. Yeah.
Yeah. It's. I mean. Yeah. That's why last year was interesting because you know there wasn't a lot of like weddings or anything like that, so I had time to really explore what I wanted to do, especially when it comes to fashion. So I mean, I made the national costume for Miss Pasay, which is like a healthcare worker Filipina hybrid. BDS hybrid. And I mean, it was well received. But it's really last year was more of like a soul searching for me, really what I wanted to do creatively and where I want to position my brands in the market. At the same time, I had time to help my mom out with her business. So that's another thing. So I mean, kind of things oddly fell into place when you know the machine stopped and you know like the superficial started disappearing.
Interesting. So we have a question actually from the community, but before I ask you that, if there are three things that you wanted to share as a, like maybe three things that you wanted to let's think about something here, three things that you want to share about starting their own business as an LGBT, maybe. What would be the three things that you would wanna?
Oh my god!
Actually, not just for LGBT, for everybody, of course, inclusivity. Yeah.
I'm thinking, what would be the three things? I think number one is you really have to know your product. You really have to like dig deep and research and really know the product or your service that you're offering to and through. I think that's the first thing before you start investing or start really acquiring assets and liabilities. That's like something. Number two, you really have to believe that what you're doing has some positive impact to the community around you. If you don't believe in what you do, then who else is going to believe it? Number three, it's gonna be hard.
Yeah.
But number three, you can take it one day at a time. Like, it's very, especially in my industry, fashion, and especially in the business sphere, it's easy to get carried away when you start earning money. You start
doing
this and that and this and that. It's best to really take it one step at a time and to really think things through before you do it in business, which is counterintuitive because a lot of like business practices would tell you to like strike while the iron is hot. It will save you a lot of money in the long run if you really think it through with your steps through, especially if you know your only fuel is your vision and your talent. It's not a bad thing to have only that, but you're running unlimited resources, so you have to be very wise about things. And yeah, always be on time.
Always be on time.
Not just with meetings, but with your deliverables, because especially in this day and age when you know a negative feedback and ripple across waters.
Yeah, social media.
You want to be on time all the time. Number four, I have a number four pala.
Ah, sige, go.
Very pedantic with your documents.
I think it's really more of like being all in, right? So like in everything that you do, if you're all in, it's all in.
Yeah, you're starting kasi, especially with me when I started really young. I mean, I really didn't think about being recording everything on paper. But now I do everything. It has to be recorded on paper or else it's not going to, it's like going to be fine.
Yeah, right. Context. Yeah, you really need to have that on paper, black and white, and then edit as it happens. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing those, Mars. I'm really, really super duper mega ultra excited for you. But we have a community question.
Sure.
So I announced it on the community that hey, we are going to have Mara Chua to be with us for the podcast. So there is a question here from Michelle, and she says, she's asking, what are your thoughts about people claiming that the Sogi Soji bill was based on feelings and not facts, when clearly there are a handful of LGBTQ discrimination cases leading to physical assault and even death all around the country? A handful of information that they easily have access to. Well, Miss Universe question. Yeah.
I'm just saying that it's based on feelings.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's I think that's one of like the predicate it's one of like the first things that we really have to tackle is the Soji bill, because it is going to be the cornerstone of how we're going to be more equal in the future, especially with LGBT with the LGBT community. I don't know who's saying that it's based on feelings, because I'm also part of the community and I know the facts, of course, and I know that yes, people do get, individuals do get discriminated at work, in school, etc. I mean, it's very real. I'm part of like the Society of Transsexual Women of the Philippines for a time, and you know, back then when these things weren't really at the fore, we had to draft letters to companies because you know, one of our members would be barred from using the female restroom, or would be demanded to have their hair cut, or you know, they cannot wear skirts inside their workplaces. I mean, this is clearly discrimination when other women and other people can wear skirts or can wear their hair long. So, I mean, these are facts. These are very real situations. even in school, like, and you have high schools that are, you know, that mandate certain hairstyles for men and women. So yeah, this is actually like going back to the Miss Universe debate. You cannot actually go full throttle with the Miss Universe debate if you don't have a selfie, because this is going to be like the corners. This is like the stepping stone to other legislations, so that trans women can be recognized equally as women here in the Philippines. And so when they're finally women here in the Philippines, they can finally join this universe, because that is the only requirement that the organization requires, as long as you can present the legal documents that you are female.
Yeah.
And you can join. And it's also going to topple a lot of like discriminative policies of other pageants that you have to be quote-unquote natural born women to be able to join. So I'm not sure if I answered the question, but
yeah, you did.
I do believe that it's really the most important legislation for LGBTQI right now that we have to fast track, and it's unfortunate that it has lingered in the Congress for years now, especially since the current administration's one of the promises of the current administration is to actually fast track this bill. I don't know what's the future for the bill, because we all know how politics is played in this country.
Well, that's just it. Yeah.
So, but it's, if it does get passed, it's going to be a very, very big step towards improving the lives of so many people, especially underprivileged people. Like,
yeah, I agree.
But returning to that question, if I was discriminated, I think part of the reason why I was not as affected by it because I have a certain privilege that I was born into a certain privilege where I can be protected from the harshest parts of life, basically. But when you're a poor trans person, like the slums, where you will be beat up, where you will still be
what a different story
for who you are, then it's going to be, then you know that bill is for the kid, because then you know they have protection. Which, although right now there is, but it's not specifically for them. So you have the child abuse, law, etc. But it's not specifically catered for, you know, for kids like that who just want to live their truth, basically.
Wow. Well, thank you for answering that. So I hope that answers your question also, Michelle. And it's really important for us, Mara, to talk about these things. I know we didn't really dive into so much, you know, pressing issues, but at least we did tackle about perception from your side of, you know, I mean, from your perception. And it's really important also for us to have that kind of insights. And I'm happy that when you said that, I was a little redundant there, but I'm happy when you said about being in a space of privilege, and it comes with responsibility also. Now, because I am in privilege, it doesn't mean I don't care about what is happening to those others who may not be as, you know, privileged or lucky as you are. But I don't think it's just really more of a play of luck, being lucky. It's really more of equality altogether. And so thank you for joining us. How can they reach you? What is, you know, and do you have any last messages for our community and also for your community who is also listening?
Yes. Happy Pride, everyone.
Yes, happy Pride.
Yeah. I mean, it's a month of celebration, but it's also, I mean, you should always remember that Pride was born out of protest, out of riot, out of women, individuals who said that they've had enough. And I think there is power and strength and solidarity. And hopefully, one day, we can consolidate that power and make meaningful change and have Soggy Bill approved.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. Great. Thank you, Mara, again for watching. I mean, for being us and for the those listeners and those viewers who are watching us. Thanks again for being here. We truly appreciate the vulnerability, the honesty, the boldness that you were just sharing a while ago. And of course, your craft that, you know, that you're creating and making women, you know, be badass. And for us, for allowing us to also to tell the stories through your craft and releasing also our alter egos through fashion. I don't think women can ever live without people like you who actually expresses those that we couldn't express, because you see it. You know that we can be it. So thank you so much. So again, this is your host, Cassie Pajarillo-Braganza. As we drive ambition and serve love, let's all remember equity over equality. Now, what does that mean? It means to treat others as they want to be treated, not as you want to be treated, and acknowledge differences. Always try to have compassion, kindness, and allow each and everyone's truth to hold no difference, but rather acceptance and understanding. And this is what I have learned from Mara from today's episode. We all have stories. I hope that you also get to tell your story. Happy Pride, everyone. Take care of yourself. And thanks again, Mara. Until next time.
Thank you. Thank you so
thanks.
Much.
You just finished listening to another episode of the Ambitious Tribe podcast by Cassie Pajarillo. If you liked today's episode, make sure to leave Cassie a review on iTunes and share this podcast with your friends on social media. It's also available on Spotify and Google Podcast. Don't forget to tag Cassie Pajarillo on Instagram or message her straight on LinkedIn. You may also head over to the Ambitious Tribe with a Plan Facebook group and be encouraged by soul-aligned and ambitious humans on the planet. Remember, you can definitely build a better business.